On Wednesday night, Donald Trump held one of his patented bizarro Superman press conferences in which he sounded off on everything, like a Breitbart commenter or a member of their editorial staff, on speed. During the course of that press conference, Donald Trump dropped one line that got the media's ire going. He said, "It would be interesting to see. I will tell you this. Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing." This drove Democrats completely up a wall. Hillary's foreign policy advisor, Jake Sullivan, he said, "This has gone from being a matter of curiosity and a matter of politics to being a national security issue." Former CIA Director Leon Panetta, who served under a president who promised Russia flexibility, you remember, complained, quote, "It's inconceivable to me any presidential candidate would be this irresponsible." Retired Rear Admiral John Hudson, he said, "This morning, Trump personally invited Russia to hack us. That's not law and order. That's criminal intent." So I guess now he's doing TV show titles. Well, this is kind of weird. Kind of a surprising turn, it turns out, from the same Democrats who claimed just a few weeks ago that Hillary's deleted emails contained nothing classified or even important. According to Hillary, remember those 30,000 deleted emails? They were just about yoga and Chelsea's wedding dress. So why would it be a national security threat if Vladimir Putin had them? And if it is a national security threat for Putin to have Hillary's emails, why isn't Hillary being prosecuted for, as Panetta put it, being this irresponsible? After all, she, not Donald Trump, created a private server vulnerable to foreign hack for the obvious and clear purpose of hiding information from the American public and transmitting classified info. Sure, Trump's a clod for saying he hopes Putin has the information. Presumably, Putin could have information that puts Americans in danger. But Trump's cloddishness is nothing next to the fact of the thing. Hillary Clinton took action that exposed America's national security to the tender mercies of thug Vladimir Putin. Democrats are now stuck between a rock and a hard place. Either what Hillary did wasn't a big deal, in which case their response to Trump should be, it wouldn't matter if Putin had her emails. What's he going to do with yoga RSVPs? Or what Hillary did was a really big deal, in which case Hillary should be the candidate on the chopping block. Now, look, I don't think Trump was playing 4D chess with his comments, mainly because I don't think that Trump knows that the horsey in chess jumps in an L formation. But whether he did it on purpose or not, he did expose the Democrats for what they are, liars and opportunists with America's national security. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show.
Tend to demonize people who don't care about your feelings.
So we have tons to get to today. If you're wondering why we're broadcasting from what appears to be a closet in Mogadishu, it's because we're broadcasting from a closet in Washington, D.C., which is sort of like Mogadishu. And it's you know, a lot to get to today. We would have broadcast from the bathroom, as I said earlier, except Hillary's server, it turned out, was in there. So tons to get to. Last night at the convention, obviously, President Obama was the big headline. President Obama was the one who ends up being the big headline coming out. I mean, first off, I just want to lead off with this. President Obama hugged Hillary Clinton last night, and it's really awkward. It didn't make a lot of sense. I don't think that Obama did Hillary Clinton a whole hell of a lot of good last night with his speech for a couple of reasons. One, I don't think that Obama's popularity is transferable. That's clear. Democrats have lost 900 state legislature seats during his tenure. They've lost 13 senators. They've lost the House. They've lost 12 governorships. They've lost just an enormous number of seats and power, and an enormous amount of power under President Obama because he's popular, but he can't transfer that popularity to anyone else, and it's true for Hillary too. But there's something just objectively odd about President Obama, who's a young, good-looking black guy, getting up there and saying, the future of the country rests in the hands of, and then he brings out this toddling old crone, Hillary Clinton, who's 15 years his senior and looks like Bilbo Baggins. In fact, Hillary Clinton looked so awkward out there last night. Obama gives her this big hug, and she looked so awkward out there last night. You could see in her eyes that she was about to transform from Bilbo Baggins, like good Bilbo Baggins, to bad Bilbo Baggins when he sees the ring. It sort of looked like this. Well, lesbian pornography in his mind. But this is so awkward, right? Because look, Obama's a good-looking young guy, first black president, and he's bringing out Hillary, and we're supposed to believe that this is a transformative moment. First of all, even women know. Black people in America do not have the same history as women in America. Okay, women have been treated a lot better in American history than black people have. So it's a step down in terms of the historicness of the moment, the historic importance of the moment. And it was an awkward night until we got to President Obama himself. Tim Kaine, who's the vice presidential candidate for Hillary Clinton, even broke out his Donald Trump impersonation, which was real weird. Here's what that looked like.
You know who I don't trust? I wonder. Donald Trump. Trump is a guy who promises a lot, but you might have noticed he's got a way of saying the same two words every time he makes his biggest, hugest promises. Believe me. It's going to be great. Believe me. We're going to build a wall and make Mexico pay for it. Believe me. We're going to destroy ISIS so fast. Believe me. There's nothing suspicious in my tax returns. Believe me.
Okay, so he does the Trump impersonation. You have to imagine that before this happened, he went to Obama and he's like, should I do my Trump impersonation? I was like, nope, don't think that's a good idea. And he goes to Hillary and he's like, no. And then he goes to Bill and Bill's like, no, I don't think you should do that. And then he gets to Joe Biden and Joe's like, that's a great idea. And so he goes out there and he does his Trump impersonation, which isn't very good. The big highlight of the night, however, was President Obama's speech. And here's the thing. President Obama's speech was almost entirely about President Obama. Now, he did do something very clever in the speech that I want to talk about, because I do think it has significant ramifications beyond this election. It has ramifications for the Republican Party and for Donald Trump and conservatism, and I want to get to all of that. But the reason that President Obama's speech didn't work for Hillary is because pretty much the whole thing was about him. Pretty much the whole speech was about how he is awesome. And he went out there, it was his valedictory. I've never seen Obama so relaxed. I've never seen him so happy. I mean, really, the last time I saw him this relaxed and happy was after he won in 2012. He went out there and he's got a big cheering throng of people, and that's got to be like a boost to the ego for that egomaniac. And he goes out there and he talks up his own record. And that's really, you know, he mentioned his own name 119 times last night. 119 times he said, I, me, or Obama. I mean, it's pretty amazing. Here is President Obama talking up his record last night, which is really why he was there. He doesn't care about Hillary.
Now, lots happened over the years. And while this nation has been tested by war, and it's been tested by recession, and all manner of challenges, I stand before you again tonight, after almost two terms as your president, to tell you I am more optimistic about the future of America than ever before. How could I not be after all that we've achieved together?
I mean, hey, we've had a stagnant economy for 8 years. Hey, the world's on fire. But hey, I'm still president, so we've achieved a hell of a lot together, gang. I mean, it's been fantastic. We even put a gay flag up on the White House. Isn't that important? I think that's pretty important. Come on. We fundamentally transformed it. So Obama's very pleased with himself, obviously. And I've said this is sort of an obstacle for Hillary Clinton because she now has to run on President Obama's record. The problem for her is that most Americans are not particularly happy with the situation right now. Most Americans feel uncomfortable. 70% of Americans think the country is headed in the wrong direction. And again, his popularity is not transferable. So the more he talks himself up, the less it matters for purposes of the election. So he also tried to talk up Hillary. To be fair, he tried to talk up Hillary, and it was an enormous failure, just a giant fail all the way from the beginning. So here's President Obama attempting to talk Hillary Clinton up.
And there is only one candidate in this race who believes in that future, has devoted her life to that future, a mother and a grandmother who would do anything to help our children thrive, a leader with real plans to break down barriers and blast through glass ceilings and widen the circle of opportunity to every single American, the next president of the United States, Hillary Clinton.
And no. I mean, mother, grandmother, she's a woman, she blasts through glass ceiling. There's nothing there. I mean, Hillary is the least attractive candidate in America, and that includes Donald Trump. She has somehow turned Donald Trump into an acceptable candidate because of how unacceptable she is as a candidate. She's not likable, she's not interesting. And when he tries to play the human card, oh, she's a mother, she's a grandmother. Notice he doesn't say a wife, because everybody knows what a joke that is, right? He says she's a mother and she's a grandmother. Most Americans don't buy that. And He keeps trying to push her, and it's just a giant fail. Every time he tries to push her, you just got to scratch your head and say, really? This is the best you can do? He does it again right here.
And for four years, I had a front row seat to her intelligence, her judgment, and her discipline. I came to realize that her unbelievable work ethic wasn't for praise, it wasn't for attention, that she was in this for everyone who needs a champion. I understood that after all these years, she has never forgotten just who she's fighting for.
I love this line. He says, I understood. After all these years, she's never forgotten just who she's fighting for. Right, Hillary. That's who she's fighting for. I mean, come on. Everybody knows this, and that's why none of this makes any sense. He then goes on to say that nobody is more qualified than Hillary to serve as president of the United States in American history. I mean, that includes presumably George H.W. Bush, who headed the CIA and was a World War II veteran and was a congressperson and was a vice president. That presumably includes Eisenhower, who ran World War II. That presumably includes George Washington, who founded the country. Yes, Hillary is so eminently qualified, so deeply qualified. Horse crap. Hillary is not qualified, and she's disqualified. She's a felon. But this is his routine. Even when Obama tries to contrast Hillary Clinton with Donald Trump, it fails because they're basically the same person. I mean, they're both self-obsessed, corrupt, power-seeking people. So, for example, when he says that Donald Trump is a guy who spent his 70 years on this earth showing no regard for working people, and he's going to be your champion, your voice, Hillary will be your champion and your voice. She says, if you want someone with a lifelong track record of fighting for higher wages and better benefits and a fair tax code and a bigger voice and for workers and stronger regulations on Wall Street, you should vote for Hillary. Like, really? Does anyone believe that she's going to be the friend of the worker and the enemy of the folks on Wall Street? There are pictures of her at the cornerstone laying for Goldman Sachs. She still has not revealed, and she won't reveal, what she said to Goldman Sachs that they paid her $225,000 for in a speech. Listen, I'm a pricey speaker. Okay, when I go and speak places, I charge people money. I don't charge anything like that kind of money. I mean, if I did, believe me, I wouldn't be doing a podcast anymore. I'd be speaking full-time, raking it in, and I'd be living the high life alongside Hillary Clinton. I mean, it's pretty amazing. So every time Obama tries to pump up Hillary, it fails. And this is why the speech was not effective for her last night. It didn't accomplish anything.
She knows that sometimes during those 40 years, she's made mistakes, just like I have, just like we all do. That's what happens when we try. That's what happens when you're the kind of citizen Teddy Roosevelt once described. Not the timid souls who criticize from the sidelines, but someone who is actually in the arena, who strives valiantly, who errs, but who at the best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement. Hillary Clinton is that woman in the arena. She's been there for us, even if we haven't always noticed.
Okay, this idea that Hillary has been there for us, even if we haven't always noticed. Has Hillary spent one minuscule moment out of the spotlight? And I love how he just classifies all of the things she did purposefully wrong as mistakes. This is one of my favorite things about Democrats. He says, sure, she's made mistakes. Like, you know, you made a mistake the other day. You left the milk out of the fridge in one hour. She made a mistake. She set up a private server to hide her emails, destroyed 30,000 of them, made them vulnerable to Russian hack, and passed classified information out, just like you leaving out the milk. That's what that was. It was just like you leaving out the milk. Full Blair Witch Project there. So that's his case for her. It doesn't work at all in any way, shape, or form. So all of that is bad. But then Obama gets to his real point. And his real point is that Barack Obama is now going to attempt to create, and this was, I thought, a genius move. He's actually going to attempt to create a new Democratic Party. That's the goal, to create a new Democratic majority. And the new Democratic majority is going to be based on the fundamental premise that Donald Trump is not a Republican and that Republicans ought to vote for Hillary Clinton. So he's doing the same thing that Trump is doing. Trump is trying to get the Bernie Sanders voters to move from Hillary to him. Obama is trying to get the Trump voters or the Republican voters to move, the Cruz voters to move from Trump to Hillary. Now, there are a few Never Trumpers, people who I think are making a foolish error in judgment, who say that they're not only not going to vote for Trump, they are going to actively vote for Hillary Clinton. I think that this is a huge mistake. I think it's just dumb up the wazoo. You can't morally vote for Hillary. You can't morally vote for Trump, in my view. If you want to vote for Trump, vote for Trump. But you certainly can't vote for Hillary Clinton, an actual felon. But Obama's making that pitch anyway. So here's the pitch Obama makes about two Republicans And this is an amazing thing because it demonstrates where we are in our political lifespan here. So this is clip 9. Here's President Obama taking out the suit that was mothballed by Ronald Reagan, putting it on and wearing it around a little bit.
Look, we Democrats have always had plenty of differences with the Republican Party. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's precisely this contest of ideas that pushes our country forward. But what we heard in Cleveland last week wasn't particularly Republican. And it sure wasn't conservative. What we heard was a deeply pessimistic vision of a country where we turn against each other and turn away from the rest of the world. There were no serious solutions to pressing problems, just the fanning of resentment and blame and anger and hate. And that is not the America I know. The America I know is full of courage and optimism and ingenuity. The America I know is decent and generous.
What Obama's doing there is what he's trying to do. Now, it sounds like Marco Rubio, right? He's basically making the conservative, compassionate conservative critique of Donald Trump. He's saying that Trump represents something that's not Republican and not conservative. Now, the first time you hear that, if you're an anti-Trump person like me, the first thing that you think is, well, I mean, at least he gets that Trump isn't a Republican or a conservative. Then you realize what he's actually doing. What he's actually doing is he's trying to get people like me to vote for Hillary. It ain't going to happen. It ain't going to happen because the solution to having a leftist in your own party is not to vote for the leftist in the other party. Leftism winning anywhere is a bad idea. But here's the problem. Because Donald Trump is a statist, because Donald Trump feels that he alone can solve, because he believes that government is a solution and not the problem, because Donald Trump doesn't believe in constitutional checks and balances, because Donald Trump is a foreign policy isolationist, because he doesn't believe in social conservatism, he has left the field of conservatism wide open for this pitch. So you've got the most demagogic leader in American history, or at least in modern American history, President Obama, going out there and saying that Trump is fanning resentment and blame and anger and hate. President Obama does that on a regular basis. He's a demagogue. President Obama fans the flames of hatred against cops. He fans the flame of hatred against the supposed evils of white America. He fans the flames of hatred against the rich folks. That's what Obama does. But now he's with a certain level of accuracy saying that about Trump. And it's actually a very smart political move. It's not going to work, obviously, because I think that most people are too smart for this. But what he's trying to do is he's trying to now create a unity party. He's trying to say there's one party out here that's in favor of a brighter America that believes in constitutional principles. And then there's Trump over there who's a demagogue. What's so galling about it? What makes you sick to your stomach when you're watching it? It really does. It makes you just want to, makes you want to vomit. When you watch it, is that you know that Obama is just that kind of demagogue. And Obama just, he keeps pushing this message. He keeps pushing this message that he's the new Reagan, and he's going to create the new Reagan coalition, except it's going to be Republicans turning Democrat instead of Democrats turning Republican. Here's President Obama going after Donald Trump for being weak on defense. I mean, again, the irony of a man who has slashed our military to its lowest working size in terms of the Navy since before World War II, and the lowest working size in terms of our Army since before World War II, that guy is ripping on Donald Trump for not being pro-military enough, because this is the political pitch. It's triangulation. Here's Obama doing that.
Meanwhile, Donald Trump calls our military a disaster. Apparently, he doesn't know the men and women who make up the strongest fighting force the world has ever known. He suggests America is weak. He must not hear the billions of men and women and children from the Baltics to Burma who still look to America to be the light of freedom and dignity and human rights. He cozies up to Putin, praises Saddam Hussein, tells our NATO allies that stood by our side after 9/11 that they have to pay up if they want our protection.
Why?
Well, America's promises do not come with a price tag. We meet our commitments. We bear our burdens.
I mean, this is unbelievable stuff, right? Because this is the man, he's out there saying that our military is great. This man mandated during sequestration, mandated that half the cuts come from the military. Mandated it. That was part of the deal. Half the cuts had to come from the military. He says that We have this great fighting force, and everybody looks to us from the Baltics to Burma. Ask the people in the Baltic states right now if they feel more or less secure since when George W. Bush left. Do they feel more or less secure now that Obama allowed Putin to invade Ukraine? Do they feel more or less secure now that Obama withdrew missile defense from Poland and the Czech Republic? Ask them if they feel more or less secure. Ask our allies if they feel more or less secure. I love that he says, you know, Trump cozies up to Putin and praises Saddam Hussein and tells our NATO allies they have to pay up if they want our protection. Obama's undermined NATO by not defending Ukraine. Speaking of cozying up to Putin, Obama's the guy who sat next to Dmitry Medvedev, then the president of Russia, and said to him, tell Putin, that we're going to give him flexibility, right? I need a little bit of flexibility until the election, and then I can do anything you want. I'll give you some flexibility after the election. Just be nice to me. And this is what he says. He says that openly right before the 2012 election. As far as praising Saddam Hussein, if Obama had his way, Saddam Hussein would still be in power in Iraq. Those rape rooms would still be operational, and Uday and Qusay would still be doing their routine in those rape rooms to various women. But the hypocrisy doesn't matter. It's the pitch that matters. And what Obama realizes is that Trump being an isolationist, not being a constitutional conservative, it's opened up this argument. So remember, this could have been our argument, folks. This could have been the argument we made this year. Everything he's saying right now, we could have been making these arguments against President Obama this year. We can't and we won't because Donald Trump is the nominee. And Trump and Obama knows that. And so he's using that as a line of attack. I will say it is pretty amazing. The same room that's cheering Obama when he's praising the military, just a few minutes before that, was booing Leon Panetta, Obama's former CIA director, for talking about killing members of ISIS and Al-Qaeda. Like clip 33, when Leon Panetta spoke, the Democrats actually were chanting no more war as Leon Panetta, the former Obama CIA head, was speaking about terrorism.
Donald Trump asks our troops to commit war crimes, endorses torture, spurns our allies from Europe to Asia, suggests that countries have nuclear weapons, and he praises dictators from Saddam Hussein to Vladimir Putin. Today,
wow. Okay, we can cut it off there. That's all that matters. So they're chanting no more war at Obama's former CIA director. And then 2 hours later, Obama's on stage and they're all cheering, yay, the military, woo! Because this is all BS. Right? It's all triangulation. Obama doesn't believe in a strong military. He doesn't believe in a small government. But again, he's trying to take that argument away from Trump because he knows it's an effective one. He's stealing all of the traditional conservative rhetoric and now he's now using it against Trump. So he did more of that. Here's clip 11.
America is already great. America is already strong. And I promise you, our strength, our greatness, does not depend on Donald Trump. In fact, it doesn't depend on any one person. And that, in the end, may be the biggest difference in this election. The meaning of our democracy. Ronald Reagan called America a shining city on a hill. Donald Trump calls it a divided crime scene that only he can fix.
Okay, so there he is, hijacking Ronald Reagan's language to say we're a shining city on a hill. I love this. I love that he says that America doesn't depend on any one person. I thought that if we elected him, the oceans were going to recede. I thought if we elected him, then the world was going to change. He was going to transform America. It doesn't depend on any one person. The entire basis of Democrat philosophy since the turn of the 20th century has been the idea that we need a great leader to lead us to glory, whether it's Woodrow Wilson or FDR or John F. Kennedy or Bill Clinton or now Barack Obama. So for him to turn around and now say, no, we don't need one great leader. I mean, who would say such a thing? You created this, right? You wonder why Trump is making that pitch? It's because you are a demagogue and you made that pitch and you won. So a lot of Republicans said, okay, well, if their demagogue can do it, then we'll demagogue too. But Obama continues to make this conservative pitch. Again, what he's about to say in this particular paragraph, what you're about to hear right now, this clip 12, what you're about to hear is something that if I were campaigning would come out of my mouth. The difference is I'm not a congenital liar. President Obama is. Here's Obama mouthing the words of conservatives while being the most leftist president in the history of the United States.
We're not a fragile people. We're not a frightful people. Our power doesn't come from some self-declared savior promising that he alone can restore order as long as we do things his way. We don't look to be ruled. Our power comes from those immortal declarations first put to paper right here in Philadelphia all those years ago. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that we, the people, can form a more perfect union. That's who we are. That's our birthright, the capacity to shape our own destiny. That's what drove patriots to choose revolution over tyranny, and our GIs to liberate a continent. It's what gave women the courage to reach for the ballot, and marchers to cross a bridge in Selma, and workers to organize and fight for collective bargaining and better wages.
It's amazing stuff, right? I mean, what he's saying there and what he's pushing is this basic conservative notion, right? It's a basic conservative notion. We don't need a self-declared savior. We don't need to be ruled. But he is the self-declared savior. He is the one who rules us. He's the one who says that if we don't buy a kind of health insurance he likes, we go to jail even if we're nuns, right? He's the one who says that he'll use his pen and his phone and he will cram down on us his vision of the universe, right? He's the one who says to Congress, if you don't pass a law that I like, well, I'll just do it myself. He's that guy. And then he's telling us that he's the one who's fighting against the idea of a ruler. He's the one who stands for the idea of a ruler. That's what he is. His most obvious line like this was at the very end of the speech, at the very, very end of the speech, Barack Obama said this. He said, America has changed over the years, and those values my grandparents taught me, they haven't gone anywhere. They're still as strong as ever. And he says, that's why anyone who threatens our values, whether fascists or communists or jihadists or homegrown demagogues, will always fail in the end. No, they won't. No, they won't, because you're the homegrown demagogue, President Obama. But the fact that he's hijacking conservative rhetoric is the more important point. When conservatives abandon conservatism in favor of nationalist populism, Democrats will try to invade that space. Now, they can't do it with credibility. But the fact that Democrats even want that space should demonstrate how powerful the rhetoric is, that we should never have abandoned it, that the language of we don't need a ruler, we don't need a savior, that's powerful language. That's our language. That's the language of the Constitution and the Declaration. It's the language of the American people. Obama's trying to hijack it to create this unity party. But the fact is, there is no unity party because he and Donald Trump are on the same side. Conservatives are not on that side. I'm on the side of small government. I'm on the side of no savior. I'm on the side of Donald Trump says he can fix it. Hillary Clinton says she can fix it. Only you can fix it. Okay, Trump can't solve your problems. Hillary can't solve your problems. Solve your own damn problems. That's what America's all about. But Obama is now doing something very clever, and he's trying to pretend that he's on the same side that I am and Trump is the leftist. No, Obama's the leftist and Trump is the leftist, and the rest of us are sitting out here in the cold trying to remember a country where our fate was in our own hands. So very, very clever stuff from President Obama. I believe at this point we have to let our Facebook Live audience go, correct, Mathis? Okay, so dailywire.com is where you go to subscribe to the rest of the show. Also, it allows you $8 a month. You get to be part of the mailbag, which we'll be doing in just a few minutes here on the Ben Shapiro Show. We always love the mailbag, the vaunted Ben Shapiro Show mailbag. Plus, we'll be talking about some things I hate, and we have to talk about Trump and Russia. Lots to get to still. So go to iTunes or go to SoundCloud, download the show, and then subscribe at dailywire.com so you can see the rest of the podcast. All right. Okay, can we continue? Are you ready? Okay, we're back. Okay, so now that we got rid of those Facebook hangers-on, we can continue with the rest of the show. Okay, so the media go nuts over all of this, naturally. The media just love it. The media are just in love. So CBS's Scott Pelley, he comes out and he says, it was a chorus of amens. It was the greatest thing. Honest to God, Vaseline stores all over the city of Philadelphia must have sold out last night just to the left media. So the left media was just beside itself. I mean, they were covering the entire convention wearing no pants. Here was Scott Pelley making the just weeping over himself. Amazing.
Barack Obama in full Sunday meeting mode, preaching to a choir which sang a chorus of amens.
chorus of amens. NBC's Lester Holt, he does the same thing. What an amazing speech. Amazing, amazing stuff.
The roar is deafening here in this arena. President Obama delivering a speech, a powerful arc, embracing hope and optimism, a passionate endorsement of Hillary Rodham Clinton, and at times an artful takedown of Donald Trump.
It was artful. It was brilliant. It was compassionate and hopeful. Okay, it was hopeful because he's been the president for 8 years. How'd it sound if he came out last night and said, boy, things are crap. Boy, things are just awful. Even the president, dude, of course you're going to come out and praise your own work. This is like that stupid exercise they used to do when you were in college where you graded, where some TAs would do this, where you grade your own work. How do you think you did this semester? Oh, I think I failed. Right? That was always the one where you had to tell people that you got a B+. Right? You'd write into your TA. I thought I did really well, but I could have tried harder. I thought I could have done better on this. Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay, so he gives himself an A, shocker. ABC's George Stephanopoulos, who was literally the chief of staff for Hillary and Bill Clinton. He's now an objective journalist, and he too was basically rubbing his own back to try and release the knots of tension from the night.
12 years to the day he burst on the national scene. Two-term President Barack Obama gives his political valedictory. Grateful, emotional at the end, thanking the American people for picking him up when he was down. Passing the baton, as he said, to Hillary Clinton.
Passing the baton. Oh, my God. It's just wonderful. Of course, the person who is most over the top, Chris Matthews, I may say, you're unbelievable. Hey, you see that, President? I used to give me a thrill at my leg. Now, that thrill is moving all the way up my leg, up my thigh, into my crotchular area. And let me tell you, I'm just feeling it tonight. It's just unbelievable. Chris Matthews, I'm going to tell you, go.
Well, it's pretty well known I've always gone for this guy. I've always liked the way he speaks about our country. From the time I first heard him in 2004 and up in Boston at the convention. And he does speak wonderfully about our country. But this guy tonight was something else, like he was when we... So I thought it was a farewell address, guys, as well as an endorsement of Hillary Clinton. A wonderful farewell address while everyone's paying attention. And I think it was a wonderful bookend to his first speech in 2004 and to his wife's speech on Monday. And Hillary Clinton is now going to have to play catch-up tomorrow night. So it's an interesting night and a wonderful night, I thought.
I gotta go home. I gotta brush my hair with that show. Gotta come back here tomorrow night. Watch that old crone talk. I don't know what I'm gonna do. It's gonna be terrible, but whatever. You know, I guess that's a job. I just go over to a hotel. I go to sleep. I wake up in the morning. I drink half a bottle of vodka. I brush my hair with that show. I come here. I watch Hillary Clinton, that old crone. God, I love her still, but she's not Barack Obama. I mean, she gives me a thrill, but it's not really in my leg. It's more like up the back of my leg. I get like goosebumps, goose flesh. Maybe because I'm scared. She's gonna pop out of the closet and go, ah! But it's okay. Chris Matthews, MSNBC. Okay, so the media go nuts over all of this. Meanwhile, so they're covering all of this. Meanwhile, outside the convention center, things are getting crazy. So as we've been mentioning, the entire week, the Bernie Sanders people have been losing what is left of their addled brains. So right outside the convention center, here is what the scene looked like. Prison episode of The Walking Dead. You got all the zombies outside trying to break down the barrier, and there's Rick in there just being a wimp like he always is. But there are the cops trying to hold off all of the Bernie Sanders supporters, who are just a delight. And that wasn't the end of it. Here's a little bit of more chaos that the media decided was not important to cover because they were too busy worshiping at the altar of Barack Obama and bringing him burned incense. Like this lady, the lady who's sitting there doing yoga in the middle of all of this. Yeah, these people are definitely going to be successes in life. You can tell. And I do love the sign in the background there, which is quite obscene. Okay, and then finally, they decided that they needed to burn a flag because it wouldn't be a DNC without a couple of burnt flags. So This one, the flag has its revenge, so I do like this one.
Burn that shit down! Burn that fucking white cap shit the fuck down! Oh, this one! Yeah, burn your leg off!
Set the flag on fire, and then he tries to go in there, and the flag attacks him. So he's attacked by the flag, and the flag wins. But by the way, if you want to tell what the Democrats are really about, the flags that they treat well versus the flags that they treat badly, they burned the Israeli flag. We showed that yesterday. They burned the American flag. We showed that today. They took down the Mississippi state flag. They do like a couple of other flags, though. They like, for example, the Soviet flag. They're big fans of this. You can see this at the DNC flying. And they like the North Korean flag as well. So that's also exciting. They like the Soviet flag, and apparently the North Korean flag showed up as well. So when Barack Obama says they're not looking for a dear leader, they actually technically are looking for a dear leader. So there's all of that. Okay. Meanwhile, the media are still going nuts over Donald Trump. They're still going crazy. They're losing their minds over Donald Trump's comments. So to flashback, yesterday, Donald Trump had this to say about Vladimir Putin hacking Hillary Clinton's emails.
By the way, if they hacked, they probably have her 33,000 emails. I hope they do.
I hope they do. I hope they have her emails, right? And then he says today, well, you know, I was just being sarcastic.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing.
Clinton campaign says this is a national security issue. Now, the idea that you've had any American calling for a foreign power to commit espionage in the U.S. for the purpose of somehow changing an election, I think that we are now in a national security space. Your reaction?
You have to be kidding. His client, his person, deleted 33,000 emails illegally. You look at that. And when I'm being sarcastic with something, first of all, they don't even know. Of course I'm being sarcastic.
Okay, and everything that he's saying, I think that he probably was not being sarcastic. He probably would like for those emails to be hacked and released, but who cares? I mean, but the media loses, the media absolutely loses. They go bananas. So the left goes bananas. First, you got Leon Panetta ripping Trump. Here's the former CIA director at the DNC ripping Donald Trump.
Donald Trump says he gets his foreign policy experience from watching TV and running the Miss Universe pageant. Donald Trump asks our troops to commit war crimes, endorses torture, spurns our allies from Europe to Asia, suggests that countries have nuclear weapons, and he praises dictators from Saddam Hussein to Vladimir Putin. Donald Trump today once again took Russia's side. He asked the Russians to interfere in American politics. Donald Trump, who wants to be president of the United States, is asking one of our adversaries to engage in hacking or intelligence efforts against the United States of America to affect an election for the future of my children and my grandchildren.
So he says this. And then on the same stage, Rear Admiral John Hudson speaks also, and he makes the same case. He says that Donald Trump is treasonous. This was treasonous behavior.
This morning, this very morning, he personally invited Russia to hack us.
People that are like, are we supposed to boo? We like
that's
boo.
Not law and order. That's criminal intent.
Okay, so he too is very hot and bothered. And the media is very hot and bothered about all of this. In fact, two of the least funny people in America, Stephen Colbert, who is nothing without his old Colbert Report personality. He's just lost it. Yesterday, here's Stephen Colbert ripping on Trump about all of this. And no joke is complete from the left comedians without a little bit of going blue. So here is Stephen Colbert going blue on Donald Trump.
Hi, college student. Well, we're not broadcasting right now, so I'd say, what does Vladimir Putin's taste like?
Yeah! What does Vladimir Putin's taste like? Right there. It's always fun that the Democrats get to make gay jokes when they want to. So that's always exciting. And Trevor Noah, who's legitimately the least funny man on earth, he did the same routine. He's very, very, very troubled that Donald Trump has a relationship with Vladimir Putin. Here's Trevor Noah being a deeply unfunny, ridiculous person.
This is getting scary, people. And I don't understand how some people say they can't see it. You know, because Donald Trump is almost like global warming right now. People are trying to deny that it's real. Oh, they think it's something we can worry about later. But it is happening right now. And it also involves a lot of cowards. So again, there should be no contest. Because let's look at this. Let's be honest, flat out, Republican or Democrat. Let's look at the worst case scenarios on both sides. With Hillary Clinton, worst case scenario, you have a bad president for 4 years, right? And America's had bad presidents before. You'll get through it. But America, you have never had a Donald Trump before. A man who claiming to be the leader of law and order and make America safe candidate. That man who invites foreign hackers to steal files that he himself said contain American national security data. That man, that's a leader you've never had. A man who publicly admires and now very possibly colludes with Vladimir Putin. A man who is lovingly endorsed by Kim Jong-un. A man who praises and doubles down on praising Saddam Hussein. These are his role models. And these people, what you have to understand is, once they're
Trevor Noah is doing this whole routine. Okay, very, very deeply unfunny man. Here's the problem, folks. If those emails contain nothing but yoga, first of all, if there were 30,000 emails about yoga, then Hillary Clinton legitimately has a ratio of yoga emails to actual yoga sessions that approaches infinity, right? It's actually approaching an imaginary number because the denominator of their actual yoga sessions is either zero or close to it. And you can't divide by zero, you can create an imaginary number. Basic math lesson on fractions. Okay, so bottom line is this. The Democrats want to pretend that Trump is the bad guy here. Hillary is the one who made this an issue. Hillary is the one who made this an issue. You can't claim that Trump is the bad guy for suggesting that Vladimir Putin should get the emails if there's nothing bad in the emails in the first place. Okay, Trump may be stupid. I think that he's not the brightest guy in the world either. But it's Hillary's fault this is even an issue in the first place. You can't be deeply upset about Donald Trump and praising Hillary Clinton about Hillary Clinton's own emails. That's her own fault. Okay, time for things I like, things I hate in the mailbag. So, things I like. We've been doing movies with Russian villains this week. So, this is a good movie. Not a great movie, but a good movie. And it's an early Kevin Costner performance. The movie is No Way Out. Also stars Gene Hackman. And it's definitely a fun movie. So, here's a little bit of the trailer.
The new boy, Farrell.
So we can take the fall in case anything goes wrong.
The loyalty.
I love you. I promise I'll work everything out.
How did you actually meet the Secretary of Defense?
I need a car. It's an emergency.
These people have already tried to kill one person who knew.
Bring this one down.
No, you can't take that.
Behind the deceit.
If it were your intention to bring down David Bryce, then I'd have no choice but to make sure that you didn't get away with it.
They mean to kill me, Sam.
Because of the truth, there's no way out.
Okay, so it's actually a pretty good movie, and it's a kind of stylish thriller from the late 80s, worth seeing. Okay, things that I hate. So the Democrats like to pretend that they don't like abortion. That's bull. They love abortion. Abortion is their favorite thing in the entire world. If they had to pick one flavor of ice cream, it would be abortion. So there's a DNC speaker who spoke yesterday. Listen to the crowd's reaction when she says she had an abortion.
I wanted a family, but it was the wrong time. I made the decision that was best for me, to have an abortion and get compassionate care at a clinic in my own community.
Yay, abortion! You made a great call to kill a baby. Woo! Yeah, these people celebrate abortion. They love abortion. And it's a sacrament to them because here's the thing about abortion for the left. Once a woman has had an abortion, the left understands, I said this yesterday on the program, the left understands that they have a woman for life once she's had an abortion, at least in most cases, because repenting for the idea that you killed your own child, I mean, it's almost unthinkable. It's almost unthinkable. The only way you can get through the day, I would imagine, is by saying it's not a child. If you acknowledge that it is a baby and that you killed it, I mean, that's got to be something almost impossible to live with. I can't even imagine. So instead, the Democrats offer you absolution. The absolution is, it wasn't a baby after all. It doesn't really matter. So if it wasn't a baby and it doesn't matter, then anybody who says it was a baby is your enemy. So once a woman has an abortion, she becomes a Democrat for life. And that's why Democrats love abortion so much. They've always been friendly to abortion and the eugenics argument, but that's the reason why they cheer when a woman has an abortion. It's a sign of her bravery. She's rejected society's evil, nasty standards. Okay, another thing that I hate from the convention, Ripley from Alien said climate change is going to kill us all. Sigourney Weaver offered up this weird video on climate change at the DNC.
Eventually, Miami will be underwater. It's just a matter of when.
The sea level is going to rise, and Miami won't be here when it rises.
There is no doubt that climate change is a threat to our national security.
We all know that human activities are changing the atmosphere in unexpected and in unprecedented ways.
If I may use a strong word, I would say that we are at the limits of suicide.
This is the painful reality of a world radically altered by climate change. It's not reality TV. Make no mistake, Trump's reckless denial of climate change is dangerous. A threat to your livelihood, your safety, your children, and the prosperity of this nation.
All of this with the global warming and that, a lot of it's a hoax. It's a hoax.
There's no doubt in my mind the damage from Sandy was worse because global warming caused the sea level to be higher.
Okay, so
I am not
very
a believer.
The good news for Sigourney Weaver is that she has a giant robot suit, so she can save us all in the end. I do love that they have Jack Black leading that thing off. Like, is this supposed to be a comedy video or a parody? When does he play with Tenacious D? So it's very, very weird stuff, but it demonstrates how deeply Hollywood is invested in this whole narrative. Because here's the truth. Hollywood could actually affect change in the world. Hollywood could make a difference. They choose not to make a difference because the kind of difference they want to make is not the kind of difference that they should be making. I mean, they could actually make the world better for people living in various places around the globe by stumping against tyranny. Instead, they rail about the sun. So that's all very exciting. Okay, final thing I hate, then some mailbag entries. The World Health Organization is considering dropping transgenderism from their dictionary as a mental disorder. Okay, this is based on no science whatsoever. There's a new study out that purports to show transgenderism is not a mental illness. It shows nothing of the sort. They took a poll of transgender people, and they said, what percentage of you have been mistreated? And virtually all of them said yes. And then they said, well, that's probably why you have a high suicide rate. Nonsense. Nonsense. Okay, as I've said before, there is no population in the history of man, as far as we know, that has had a 40% suicide rate, except for Jews living in Nazi Germany. Okay, except for Jews living in... So if you think transgenders are being treated like Jews living in Nazi Germany, then I guess the comparison holds. Otherwise, this is nonsense. And the reason that transgender folks are committing suicide is because they're suffering from something that's unbelievably painful and difficult to deal with. And the fact that the scientific community is willing to bow to political correctness instead of focusing on science, it's going to cost lives. It's going to ruin a lot of lives. It's going to be telling parents that they ought to mutilate their children. It's really cruel and terrible. Okay, time for some entries from the vaunted Ben Shapiro Show mailbag. Luke writes, hey, Ben, it seems like the Democrats are scared they could actually lose. Trump does seem to have the momentum. How scared should Democrats be at this point? I'd say they should be pretty scared. I mean, I don't think that it's a foregone conclusion that Trump wins. I think he still has an uphill battle. You know, the heart part of me says Trump has a better chance to win than the head part of me. The head part of me says that it's still 75-25 that Hillary walks away with the election. But she's really bad at this, really bad at this. What should worry Democrats, what should keep them up at night, is the fact that Hillary Clinton is legitimately an awful candidate. She somehow turned a race against Donald Trump, who is a reality TV show star who knows nothing about policy. She's turned that race into a generic D versus generic R election cycle, which is almost amazing. Josiah writes, Ben, what are your thoughts on Gary Johnson? I will not be voting for Hillary or Trump, but what do you think about Johnson? Okay, so a few problems with Johnson. So number one, Johnson isn't really libertarian. He's libertarian on pot. He's not libertarian on the budget. He nearly doubled it while he was governor of New Mexico. He's not libertarian on religious freedom. He wants the government to cram down his perception of what sort of clientele everybody must serve. He's obviously not somebody who's particularly strong on national defense. I have a lot of problems with Gary Johnson as a candidate. Elliot writes, how do you think future generations 100 years from now will look at our decade? Will it be used as a cautionary tale for the effects of extreme leftism and extreme tolerance with all of the Islamic terror attacks, Black Lives Matter attacks, censorship, etc.? Elliot, I think that they're going to look at it. It's really up to us. What I mean by that is we're now at what they call an inflection point. If we pick ourselves up off the mat, if we build a new conservative movement, if we're able to rectify the imbalances that have plagued the country, then this could be seen as sort of the dark period before the dawn. It could be seen like the late 60s and 70s before Reagan. Or it could be seen instead as the high point because things get worse and worse. It could be seen as, you know, this was the early 60s, and then things just got progressively worse because at least now the crime rate is low. At least now the economy isn't totally terrible. It could get worse if the left continues to have its way. Ella writes, I love you, Lindsay. You are awesome and make the show so much brighter. Oh, well, thanks for putting the entire show on Lindsay, guys. It's okay. Lindsay is the best. And Lindsay's only out today because she's taking care of her mom. So obviously prayers for Lindsay and her mom. It says, please look at Ben Shapiro, Thug Life, Bernie or Boo on YouTube. You will find someone actually got a tattoo of Ben's face on their arm. Please show Ben so he can have a laugh at the irony. Yeah, I did see the tattoo, and all I can say is, why would anyone do that? Really? I'm anti-tattoo generally, and I have this face on my own face. Like, I don't think you should put this face anywhere else. It's fine. It's good right here. It doesn't need to be on your leg. Seeing as it, and then the question is, if Hillary is elected, is there a possibility of impeaching her? Almost nil. Almost no. I think impeachment is largely off the table in the future. I think it's very difficult to see a time when somebody actually gets impeached. Unless it's a Republican. It's possible a Republican could get impeached, but Republicans are too wimpy to impeach Democrats. Obama has committed impeachable offense half a dozen times here. Lilia writes, hi, Ben. Your wife is a doctor. You have little kids. What's your stand on vaccination? My family is deliberating on the issue since my friend's daughter developed a pretty severe form of autoimmune disease after the vaccination. On the other hand, no school in California will accept your kid without immunization records. Thank you so much for keeping your daily podcast interesting and entertaining. God bless. Okay, so my feeling on, I'm very, very, very strong proponent of vaccination. Anecdotal evidence that suggests that people who get vaccinations get autism, there's no evidence on a statistical level to back any of that. There's always anecdotal evidence to back everything, which is why you see people who still rely on holistic medicine, even though there's no scientific basis for it. Try curing yourself with herbs, you'll probably die. Try curing yourself with an antibiotic, you'll probably do a lot better. Vaccinations are extraordinarily important, and it's actually a place where I do think the government has a role. The reason government has a role is because government is there to tamp down what we call externalities, right? I get to wave my hand around unless you're standing right here, and if I hit you in the face, I've done something wrong. Your failure to get a vaccination means that my kid, who's too young to get a vaccination, can get your disease, or a pregnant woman who can't get vaccinated could get your disease, or somebody with cancer could get your disease. You do have a responsibility to get a vaccination. It's why herd immunity is important. Jacob writes, hi, Ben. As a Polish guy wildly in love with the ideas of American conservatism, how worried about a Trump presidency should I really be? Is a Trump-led pivot to abandon Central and Eastern European allies at all possible? Would the GOP try to counteract it in any way? The missus and I are both great fans of yours and of Klavan's. Well, you have great taste, at least half great taste. Okay, so how would the GOP counteract Trump's foreign policy? This is one of the areas that's a little scary about the presidency. The commander-in-chief has ultimate power over foreign affairs. The Congress has very little say over it. And that's where Trump could do a lot of damage. Hillary's already done an enormous amount of damage there. So it's very difficult to stop a president hell-bent on ruining our foreign policy, as Congress has shown, right? They couldn't even stop Obama's crappy Iran deal. Andrew writes, do you have any upcoming debates scheduled? I don't at the moment. I know there's some people trying to book some. Honestly, the biggest problem we have is finding leftists who are willing to debate me. I'm willing to pretty much debate anybody. The left always has problems debating me. Maybe they watch the Thug Life videos and see that's probably not a good idea. Simi writes, hi, Lindsay, you have the greatest laugh. Also, you're an awesome mailbag screener. Okay, so I get the pattern. So if you say something nice about Lindsay, you get in the mailbag, guys. Hi, Ben, love the show. Great coverage of the freak shows in Cleveland and Philly. Can you please invite Cenk Unguiar for a debate on the show? He's disgusting, and there needs to be a video of you owning him. Well, I'm happy to host Cenk Unguiar. I don't pay a lot of attention to him because usually what I see is him screaming a lot of people. And I don't find that, but he's sort of like left-wing Alex Jones. I don't see screaming at people as a real solution to the world's problems. If you want to see something really funny, actually, my friend Steven Crowder just made a video where he plays Cenk Unguiar, and it's really, really funny. He had me call in for a bit, and it's pretty hilarious. Joe writes, hey, Ben, I have two questions for you. If you could pick anyone to be president, who would you choose? Second, my mom was telling me about an incident where air traffic controllers were on strike and President Reagan forced them to go back to war. Could you explain what happened? Okay, and the first one, if I could choose anyone to be president in the United States, I've said this before, I think Thomas Sowell would make a fantastic president. He's considered, he's thoughtful, and he really knows policy and economics, and he knows morality too. As far as the air traffic controllers on strike, the basic history there is that very early in his presidency, the air traffic controllers union decided they weren't getting enough pay, so they decided to strike. President Reagan, instead of shutting down all air traffic and caving to them, he fired all of them and brought in scabs. And then they caved, and then they came back. That's the basic story there. Jacob writes, liberals in the media often cite the 2008 recession as evidence of the failure of the free market. To what extent was the 2008 recession a government failure? To what extent was it a failure of the free market? Okay, so my feeling is that it was entirely a failure of the government. The free market plays a role because the way that the free market works is that it's profit-seeking. Once government is involved at all, you've tainted the admixture. Once you've dumped, I mean, it's basically, think of the economy like a soup. Once you take a little bit of arsenic and pour it in the soup, the entire soup is poisoned. That's true about government involvement in the economy. Once you've got the government perverting the incentive structure, then what you're going to get is a lot of people competing for that government dollar. That's what happened in the mortgage market. The government basically said, we'll back lots of mortgages at very low rates, so long as you give them to Black and Hispanic people and you make sure that those people get the loans regardless of their credit histories and their ability to repay. That's been a disaster, of course, because everybody basically defaulted. And then the government steps in and says, the free market failed. This is my problem with the economic philosophy known as corporatism. That philosophy says that the government has to be involved in greasing the wheels when it comes to the economy. The government cannot do that. All that the government is capable of doing is screwing things up, screwing up the incentive structure, making sure that dollars aren't spent where they're most efficient. Instead, dollars are spent where the government thinks they ought to be spent. And then you have a lot of people running after those dollars because everybody is self-interested. Self-interest in capitalism, self-interest in free markets are not the same thing. Free markets are markets in which there is no government intervention. Okay, folks, well, that brings us to the end of the week. Hillary Clinton is supposed to speak tonight, so make sure that you stock up on cotton for your ears and bleach for your eyes because it will be a hell of a show. We'll be back next week. Don't ruin things while I'm gone. I mean, you keep ruining it every weekend, but try not to ruin things while I'm gone. We'll be back, and hopefully we'll talk a little bit about this lecture I'm giving in D.C. at Young America's Foundation. It's wonderful to see you guys, and we'll see you all next week. I'm Ben Shapiro. This is The Ben Shapiro Show.
Gear up for the great outdoors with Forlo, the brand that's revolutionizing outdoor apparel. Forlo's non-compromise, 100% American-made outdoor apparel protects your body from the elements so that your mind stays focused on the hunt, on the water, or on the trail. Your adventure starts with a solid foundation, which is why Forlo's base layer is designed to provide the comfort and insulation you need to keep going when the temperatures drop. Their uniquely breathable down layer ensures that you stay warm without overheating. And since proper protection goes beyond insulation, the final layer, a waterproof shield, completes the system. From UPF sunblocking material that shields you from harmful rays to polygene technology that masks your scent, Forlo's innovative designs and cutting-edge material ensures that you can focus on the adventure, not the elements. Their commitment to innovation and American craftsmanship will carry you beyond the known and into the unknown, where the journey truly begins. Get the most out of your time in the outdoors and go to Forlo.com and use code DAILYWIRE for 20% off your purchase. That's Forlo.com, code DAILYWIRE.